Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, also known as Parking Wars. We'll talk more about that very, very shortly. It's the last podcast of this particular season. We have gave you the cheeky two extra ones. We normally do 10 episodes. We've done 12 because we had a week off in the middle of it because Rye was playing race cars and I was going watching racing bikes and Jack was, I was going to say learning how to park, but he wasn't. And we're going to put that video out a little bit later on our Twitter feed if you haven't already seen it. There's photographs everywhere. And Jack will talk more about my parking, I'm sure, as the podcast goes on as well. So probably I'm just getting a few digs in very, very early. Anyway, before we go any further, we always do it at this point. Normally at this point, we would say hello, Jack, hello, Ryan. And of course, last week didn't quite work like that. But this week, we're back to full strength. The squad is here. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello. Nice to see I haven't been elbowed out this week.
You're very precious, aren't you, about these things, Jack? Yeah, we'll talk more about why you weren't here very, very shortly, but we need to say hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello.
It's lovely to have you back at the top of the programme, Ryan, because you never give me a hard time about these things. You just appreciate appreciate what I do.
But, Jack, we did talk about you being a NASCAR star while in your absence, but now you're just a ditch-hooking NASCAR star.
There's no ditches on an oval. I know that for a fact.
Maybe stick to an oval.
Shake and bake, baby. Shake and bake. No, Jack was with us, and we had some issues again with technology, and Jack couldn't do part two of the program. So that's why Zav, who was meant to be Ryan's stand-in, ended up as Jack's stand-in, and it all went that way round. But it worked. We got away with it, kind of.
It was good. I enjoyed it more than when I'm on it, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I think you should have Zav. I think me and Zav should rotate each week and see how many downloads you get.
Oh, that sounds like a challenge, doesn't it?
I'd just like to thank Zav for sending me the video of the parking incident.
Anyway. Oh, it was Zav, thanks, was it? Excellent. I'll remember that, Zav. I know you're listening. I'll remember that. Don't you worry.
I love it. Listen, before anybody says anything, if you were at the finish of the Nicky Chris stages, we're going to talk more about it a little bit later on. I had an absolute Western Supermare. I had a nightmare myself parking due to the fact that Nicky Gisk was trying to give me directions of where he wanted my rally car to be, and it didn't quite work out the way he wanted, much to the dismay of the watching crowds. But still, there you go. We're going to talk more about that, as I say, a little bit later on. But I wanted to get to it seems weird because we do headlines, obviously, from MN at this point, and it's been the British Grand Prix. So rallying has been pushed all the way to kind of pages 18 and 19, it seems, Jack. But I'm going to try and do some kind of numerical order to this, but it doesn't feel like it's in any type of order. But I'm just going to do it anyway. DMAC targets Evans and Tanak for 2017. Tell us about this story, because I'm sure we've all got opinions on this. Tell us about this one, Jack.
Yeah, so David Evans run a story this week saying that if DMAC fail to get any sort of manufacturer deal with M Sport like they've been trying to do for a while now, they'll run two 2017 Fiestas, and they're obviously hoping to retain Ott, and I suppose in a way retain Elvin as well, because they're looking at adding him to the WRC lineup if he's available.
Right. Now, this is where the story kind of gets a little, because it's like anything, rumour mills and stuff like that. And things have been supposedly changing at DMAC for the last few months. And what's interesting about this story that David's wrote is that it does mention, unashamedly, the fact that DMAC Jack have been working with Cooper Avon producing the latest tyres, and that seems to be more now potentially a partnership as opposed to just a production agreement.
Yeah, I think some of the discussions that have been going on for a while now, haven't they? And we've kind of known since they've started making their tyres in the UK that it's been with the help of Cooper, and that could be a partnership that will keep going further forward and help them to keep creating tyres in the UK as far as we know.
So, right, obviously, it's good news, the fact that Oit is going to stay in a car potentially. It's, reading about it, Dick's very keen to keep Oit in the car. And obviously, Elvin has been flying the flag for him in the British Rally Championship, of course, this year. And again, you hear things, we get worried about things, and then, it comes out, everything's rosy, and there could be a two-car team.
Yeah. Well, obviously, it's been an interesting program this year with Tanak, hasn't it? And it's been great to have Tanak there in a DMAC tired M Sport car, because on a lot of occasions, he's been the quickest car, hasn't he, as we've seen. So it's been great for both DMAC and M Sport, I guess, to have him there. It'll be interesting to see, won't it, what's going to happen with M Sport 4 next year, you know, the actual M Sport team, before we talk about DMAC, because you go into all of them sort of building an incredible new 2017 car. You've got to have somebody fast in it, haven't you? You've got to have somebody fast setting the stage times. And we haven't really seen that very often from the regular pair this year. Camilli seems to be getting quicker. Osberg's had his problems and hopefully getting to the bottom of them. But it's still been Tanak that's generally been setting the times. So I'm sure they want, the quickest people they can have in the league cars. But yeah, like you say, I mean, for DMAC to undertake potentially a two-car team of 2017 cars, I mean, that's a huge investment. Huge amount of money required to do that. DMAC still keeps spending the money. It's a relatively new company. They've clearly got some investment behind them. And it'll be interesting to see what happens, how it all works out. And you hope that DMAC here for the long term. It's certainly been good for the sport short term. We talked about this tyre situation last week, and the fact that DMAC are there with a different tyre in WRC at the minute is creating quite a lot of interest.
Now, we've just been talking, or you've just mentioned the 2017 car. Now, latterly in this report, Jack, Malcolm Wilson's talking about the team will face a race against time to prepare the 2017 Fiesta RSWRC for January's Monte Carlo. Looking at who's going to be driving the car with regards to testing and getting kilometres into the car, he plans on using all the drivers that are there at the moment, and obviously Matthew Wilson, his son, of course, who does quite a lot of the testing and heads up the Bentley programme. But again, it's pressure for M Sport that they've been here before, producing a new car last minute and everything else. But does this give us any indication of drivers for next year? Because I want to come to silly season in a minute, but does this give us an indication of perhaps who could be around next year?
I think M Sport is the pin in the grenade, if you like, for the drive market next year, because I think dependent on what they do with their tyres, you know, if they go with DMAC, then it's very unlikely DMAC will run a team in the WRC next year. So that's two cars gone straight away if M Sport signed this DMAC deal. So if they stick with Michelin, we could get two cars, and you know, potentially we could get Elvin and Ott, we could get someone else and Ott, we could get neither of those two in those two DMAC cars, you know, we could have someone else. But we talked at length over the past few weeks on Absolute Rally about the number of drivers looking for a seat next year, and I think we've all kind of agreed that the quality is there in terms of the drivers that are trying to break into the WRC. So if M Sport don't sign that DMAC deal and we get two cars, that's two potential spots for some of the guys we've been talking about over the past few weeks, and if they don't, then that's two more seats gone, isn't it?
Now, one seat that could be available, moving on to the next headline, is Capito fears Ogier could retire, so there could be a seat at Volkswagen. Tell us a little bit about this one, Jack.
Yeah, I think it's in reaction to the meetings that have been going on in the World Sport Motorsport Council in terms of how the running order is going to work next year. I think, you know, we've all kind of sensed this increase in discontent from Ogier, that I think he's getting a bit bored of even complaining about it now. He seems to have gone quiet over the past few rounds, and you know, he's not been quiet on the pace in Sweden, as he were running orders affected him. So you know, Capito's given us a few quotes saying that you know, if they change and run, you know, well, if they run three days with a leader of the championship first on the road, then that could be something that would discourage Ogier from coming back.
Right. Do you sense that Ogier perhaps, you know, he's like yourself, proud father, he's just become a father for the first time, and you know, he was quite adamant that if needs be, he would, quite rightly, he was going to leave the rally if he needed to be at the birth of his first child and everything else. Has his, perhaps his perspective of the sport changed that dramatically?
I don't think we're going to see Ogier retire anytime soon. I think this is another of Capito's little methods of stirring the job up and trying to turn things a little bit more in Volkswagen's favour. No, I don't think so. I think it's true that You know, Ogier has been a little bit, if we can say, off colour for him on recent rallies, but he's still comfortably leading the World Championship. He's still going to win this year's World Championship, all been equal. So I'm sure we're going to see him in a Volkswagen in Monte Carlo next year. I can't see it any other way. But at the same time, he must be getting tired of these anti-Ogier tactics. And, you know, and who knows? I don't think we'll see him go on forever in WRC, but I don't think we'll see the back of him just yet.
I just wonder whether he's almost treading water for the rule change and for the new car. You know, it's just, you know, the new car is going to be, you know, from what the drivers who have driven these new things have said, and you know, I want to talk about the Hyundai actually very, very shortly, but, you know, it is like night and day. It's such a massive evolution on from what they've had before. You know, it's not just a little upgrade. It's a massive upgrade. And of course, we've talked about the power and the downforce and everything before. Perhaps, you know, he doesn't need to push, does he, for the rest of the year, you know?
Well, like we said, he's still going to win the championship, isn't he? Because he does the most consistent job. The cars are going to be a lot faster next year. They're going to be, you know, more advanced. But he's the man to exploit that again, isn't he? You know, I'm sure next year's cars will be exciting. And I'm sure he'll be motivated by driving them because he will do a fantastic job in them. And he'll be equally consistent as he's been. What we'll hopefully see next year is a little bit more regular competition for him, not just from within the Volkswagen team, but I certainly expect to see Chris Meek on the pace every rally. And let's hope that, you know, Hyundai can produce a car, and then we're going to see certainly Paddens coming to the fore, and you know, and let's hope we're going to see an M Sport Fiesta that's right at the front as well.
Jack, I don't like what Ryan's just said there. I don't think we see Sebastian Ogier going anywhere soon, especially with the new car coming in. But he doesn't strike me as the type of person that perhaps would be willing to carry on and do other things the way kind of Loeb has. I could almost imagine him kind of getting to the point where he's done and walk away, and you probably never hear from him again.
That's an opinion, I guess. I don't know Ogier well enough to know what his future plans are and you know where he sees himself going. I know he's done little bits in circuit racing. I think he had a go in the Porsche Carrera Cup a couple of years ago, didn't he? And he's done bits and bobs. So I don't think there's anything to say that he wouldn't go and do other things. He had a very short lead-in period into rallying, didn't he? Really, he was at world championship level very quickly. So maybe he's not had that sort of that fever that some people get, where, you know, they're proper spectators as children and stuff like that. I'm not sure what Ogier's background is in terms of that. So, we could see him step away, or you know, he's got to earn some money somewhere, hasn't he? So, be interesting to see.
I don't think he's going to be scratching around for change in his jar. I don't think he's going to struggle. Let's put it that way. I don't think he's going to struggle. Now, really, really, as ever with David, really, really nice piece where his column with regards to the silly season, which, you know, I think we alluded to it a few weeks back now, but silly season is almost upon us. And again, it's questioning who is the hottest property. Of course, we spoke about Timo Sunderland last week, and I think we spoke about Pontus Tiedemann, and we spoke about Lappi as well. But is this just David's opinions, or do you think perhaps he's picked up on something maybe around the paddock?
I don't think you can ever doubt that David knows more about what's going on in the back of the WRC paddock than pretty much anyone, really, to be honest, apart from obviously the teams themselves. But I think he's just trying to emphasise the point that, you know, you shouldn't read too much into somebody who hasn't got a contract next year going to visit a team, because, you know, that's not news. As he said with Nerville, he's gone to visit Tommy Macken, and he's been to visit Citroën or wherever he's been. That's not news, is it, really? And it used to happen a lot back in the 90s, and I think he's just trying to say that no one's really nailed on, and to keep your eye out on all the open seats, and don't read too much into someone visiting a factory, because it doesn't always mean that there's going to be a deal at the end of it.
Now, I guess where most of the seats are available at the moment, Ryan, is Toyota. And, you know, there still isn't a great deal coming out. We know Tommy's testing, and we know, you know, Johanan's there as well. I think Mika Hirvonen's been doing a little bit of work. But I want to talk about the Gazoo set up a little bit later on, because they've got their junior drivers out on the next round of ERC, which is Estonia, which is coming up this weekend. So we're going to talk more about that a little bit later on. But I don't know. Is this the silliest season that we've had for some time? Because there could be such massive changes, or are we just going to see very, very tiny changes, you think?
Firstly, you're saying there's nothing coming out of Toyota. There is. It sounds like staff. So they've had certainly a number of technical changes by the sound of it over the recent weeks. You know, their technical director leaving, for example, has been probably a little bit of a surprise at this stage, quite so early in the programme. But anyway, let's hope that that doesn't derail their plans too much. I mean, they've come out publicly, the team, and obviously said that he was just part of an overall structure, and I'm sure the car will be competitive. But I don't know yet. I don't know if we. Well, like you said, they do need drivers ultimately, don't they? I can still see Latvala going there long term, but we know that's not going to happen for next year. But who do they put in as two front running drivers for next year?
Do you know this must be the first silly season, boys, that we've not heard Petter Solberg's name said for forever.
I think we read that 6 months ago, didn't we? That he might be going to Toyota.
We did. And Loeb as well. He was mentioned in that story as well that we did quite a few months ago.
I mean, I think we wouldn't be surprised now. It almost seems like Juho Hanninen's probably going to do a year there, isn't he? He obviously is doing the majority of the testing. He's a known quantity, so I wouldn't be surprised certainly to see him taking one of the full time seats. But then you would expect that they're still wanting a current established WRC driver in the other seat as well.
Yeah, now we'll move away from silly season. Well, unfortunately, a little bit of a story about Danny Sordo being injured, Jack. Just tell us what happened here. I've seen a few bits and pieces on social media. Apparently there was a test going on, but a bit of a nasty one.
Yeah, he was testing in Finland, and obviously, you know, accidents in Finland are never good. Well, accidents anywhere are never good, are they? But, you know, Finland's usually a big one, isn't it, if you go off there at high speed. They suffered a fractured vertebrae, and he's back home now trying to rest up for Finland, could potentially miss Finland, but that's not confirmed yet, and we're obviously waiting to see how he is.
Right. I suppose at this point, and nobody ever wishes, you know, ill on a teammate or whatever, but I'm guessing, right, someone like Kevin Abring will be sat there now kind of going, you maybe need another week off there, Dan. have an extra week off. I'll look after the job for you.
Yeah, and that's the difficult thing, isn't it, when you're a fourth driver in a team such as that. You know, they've clearly got very, very strong resources in that team. They've got three good drivers already, and then Kevin coming in trying to get more experience, trying to get more mileage. I'm sure he would love the opportunity to stand in for Danny Sordo, but it would be a shame if Danny was ruled out, because like we said, he's been doing a solid job so far this year. But any up and coming driver would grab that chance with both hands, wouldn't they?
I think so. I want to talk about the guys as well at Toyota Gazoo Racing. I want to come to this story, Jack, as it's alongside the sort of one, so it's quite easy to move straight to. But there seems to be, I've noticed they've took R5 Fiestas. I don't know whether that says anything about the job at all, whether anything can be read into that at all. I don't believe there is, but there's two R5 Fiestas out for the juniors on Rally Estonia this weekend.
Yeah, I won't read too much into that, to be honest. It's quite well known they've used Subarus to train in so far, so I don't think there's anything to read into car choice. It's just cars that are available, I think, isn't it? And, you know, the Fiesta's proven to be very reliable, but we've got Takamoto Katsuta and Hiroki Akai. Both doing Estonia. So
he's been practicing that.
I was quite impressed. Yeah, me too.
Well done.
Yeah, thanks very much. So Dan Barrett's going to co-drive with Katsuta, so a name we know well from obviously being with Alvin Evans. So it'd be interesting to see how those two guys get on. But they've got a good yardstick in Alexei Lukyanov, who won the event last year in an NR4 spec car. So it'll be a good benchmark for them to go against and see where their pace is at.
This is Absolute Rally Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx, and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, Marshall, or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate. We can cater for individuals, teams, or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally, and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers, and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766 787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
I want to talk about the juniors in a second, but pop quiz, dead easy one for you guys, this one. I don't even know why I'm bothering. But what have the two co-drivers got in common? Come on, boys, don't let me down. Glenn McNeil and Dan Barrett, what have they both got in common? Being co-drivers.
No idea.
Ryan Champion, I'm shocked.
I'll probably kick myself when you tell me, but go on.
They both sat with Toshi.
Yes, they did. Absolutely.
There you go, boys.
I didn't know Dan Barrett had sat with Toshi. I knew Glenn had, but
I thought you were going to tell me they were both Burnley fans, and I was thinking.
You know what? I owe Dan Barrett as well, because when Burnley, he was very passionate about these seasons. He told us, I said, if you get promoted, the last time he came on, I said, if you come on and do this for me, mate, I'll take you to Everton against Burnley. So I owe him a ticket for the match when they play Everton over here, so I'll have to get him over. I refuse to go to a Liverpool match ever. In case you're listening, you're a Liverpool fan, I'm sorry, I am a blue. But there you go. Now, we've just been talking, actually, about co-drivers changing seats and stuff like that. Now, friend of the show, our man in the ERC Juniors, Chris Ingram, came a little bit left field this one, Jack. Change your co-driver for Estonia.
Yeah, he's switched to Elliot Edmondson, who's been sat with Neil Simpson in a Skoda R5 in the British Rally Championship this year. Not done the last two rounds through, unfortunately, having quite heavy work commitments. Neil has two Skoda dealerships and works pretty hard, actually, so he's not been able to do the last two rounds of the BRC. Chris has picked up Elliot as someone who's a bit local to him, with the aim of hopefully doing a bit more preparation before the events. And he said thank you very much to his old co-driver, Katrin Becker, but he needs someone who he can prepare with before the events, as well as actually on the events as well, while he's trying to win this championship. So I think that's the main reason behind the move.
Yeah, well, we'll have a catch up with Chris after it. I know obviously he was keen to get somebody a bit closer to home. I think I spoke to him last week, and I think he just wanted somebody that perhaps he could work with, as you just said correctly, away from events as well. And I wish him the very best of luck. I think he's seeded as the front running ERC Junior this weekend on Rally Estonia. And again, if we just have a little peek at Rally Estonia before we move away from it. Strangely enough, right, all the front running ERC boys are back, yet they missed Ypres.
Yes, that's true enough. Ypres is a specialist event, isn't it, I guess, in that you're always going to have an awful lot of tough local competition and a big depth of local competition. And most of the Belgian runners registered for the championship, didn't they? So I guess there's always a good chance if you go to Ypres that even if you have a reasonable rally, you might only finish somewhere inside the top 10 in terms of registered runners, whereas I guess on this rally, it'll be the usual suspects back to the front again.
I tell you what is going to be interesting as well is that he's not a forgotten man. It'd be unfair to call him that, but there's two names that completely scream out at me on the central list. There's Sander Palm, who is partnered once again by James Morgan. I think he had somebody else, I think, on his last couple of WRC rounds. I might be wrong on that. Jack, am I wrong on that? I don't think James sat with him on the last...
I think James did.
Did he?
I think he did Portugal, yeah.
Did he? Right, okay.
I know James is on the entry list, and that's correct, but they are struggling to get a car after Xander crashed on the last event, so that might be an entry worth just putting a little asterisk next to whether they can get a car in time is going to be a struggle.
Okay, because they were run by Marco, weren't they, Marco Martin Motorsport, so yep. I don't know whether that's still an ongoing thing or not, but I would have been interested to see how he goes against the top ERC guys, because obviously that big jump from winning the DMAC Drive Trophy and then going into that R5 car last year, it's a big jump to make, isn't it? Excuse me. Now, the other guy is a guy who did BRC a few years ago, and he absolutely, and Ryan will remember this, we've been talking about, of course, the Twingo R2, what's the guy's name he's driving one this year?
Sindre Furseth.
That's the man. He's really made it sing. Now, originally, when they first came over to the British Rally Championship, they had a guy called Slim Palangi drive one, and it was Autotech that were running them. And back then, now he's out in an Evo 10. Go on, sorry, right?
Asquith Autosport.
Sorry, Asquith was running them, and he kind of just seems to disappear after that year. And I've just noticed he's on the entry list as well in Evo 10. And again, he had some serious pace about him. It's just we see these drivers kind of come and go a little bit, but obviously they are still plugging away in their own right and everything else. So now I'd be interested to see how these guys go. But there is a bit of a question mark, is there then, Jack, with regards to Sander's entry?
Yeah. It was, I remember now, it's Poland. They had quite a big shunt. I saw pictures of it on social media, and James was in the car, and I spoke to him very briefly about it, funnily enough, in a petrol station on the way home from the kick race. We bumped into each other, but he said they're struggling to get a car, but they're still hoping to do the event. It's not a definite no or a definite yes at the minute.
No. Struggling to get a car, in brackets, struggling to get the money together.
No, I don't. Normally, I would agree with you, Ryan, but at the minute, the shortage of Fiesta R5s is so great that I think there might actually be some truth in what James is saying.
Usually, if the money's sat there, there's a car to be found.
I think there's a few more R5s getting parked up now, certainly this side of the pond. I think there's a deal to be had on a few, certainly from this side of the pond. But still, there you go. You've just mentioned the Nicky Griss rally, and we're going to come to that now. And obviously, we were out on it. Now, I wanted to pick up your headline, Jack. Griss organisers beat the conditions. Talk to me about that headline.
You probably don't like that headline, do you?
I'm not sure. I'm going to talk about it in a minute. I'm not sure. I just want to see. I want to get your perspective on the rally, and then I'll give my perspective from somebody that was actually in it.
Yeah, I think our perspectives might be a little bit different, Tony.
Yeah, possibly. Go on, talk us through it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the first thing to point out is it's a national event, and it's an organising crew that is organising a national event. So, you know, for the numbers that they had, the number of stuff that they had to come up against was pretty heavy. You know, the conditions on Saturday made the stages really poor on Saturday's run through, especially the second running, as I'm sure you'll talk about shortly, Tony. And I think the weather on Sunday didn't help either. What also didn't help was the fact that the event was being run alongside live military exercises, which was a problem brought about by the fact that the BRC calendar was changed less than a year before the event, which the event has to give notice to the army in 12 months in advance to say that, you know, you agree that you won't do anything on this weekend, basically, to the military. And obviously they couldn't do that. It was about six or seven months before the event that they did that. So, you know, the event was running alongside live military exercises. There were not lots of mistakes, but there were quite a few mistakes. You know, some of the chicanes the drivers weren't too happy about, too tight. Chicanes are always a contentious issue, aren't they, with rally drivers? No one likes chicanes. I thought the stages ran quite well in terms of the ones that actually ran on the Sunday, in the sense that they didn't beat the bogey time. All the stages were run to normal timing. So that was good. And all in all, you know, no rally's perfect. And I thought the organisers did a pretty good job, actually, of running a difficult event.
No, I agree with pretty much about 98% of that, by the way. Neil and the team behind the event, it was the first thing I gave credit to. I think they were given a massive curveball, and they had a lot to deal with. My issues with the actual rally is when you tag it onto a national event like that, and we've come up against this on all the rounds of the BRC this year. And I have spoke to Ian Campbell about it, so I'm not telling tales out of school or whatever, but when you pay a premium entry to do the British Rally Championship, and then you also put national events in into the mix as well, and since the seeding changes come about, you have got people who are seeded ahead of you paying half the entry fee that can affect your rally. That's when I have an issue, and that is why, if it continues the way it is, we won't be doing the British Rally Championship again.
I think that's a fair statement to make. I think, you know, you're definitely right in the sense that obviously you're paying a premium entry, and you're not getting premium stages because of another event running alongside, aren't you? I think that's the case you're trying to make there.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's exactly what it is. And, you know, obviously when you've got four stages repeated twice. You know, there was Crickham was a very, very nice stage. Halfway was horrible. Route 60 was horrible. Monument was okay. Although lesson learned, taking the jump that way flat in fifth gear is not the way to go. And I've still got the back pain to prove it. But I really felt for the organisers. And the reason why I felt for the organisers is, again, when you're outside the car and you're reporting on it, Jack, it's a very different perspective you have. When you're in it, it's a very, it feels completely, it's like when we were arriving at some of the arrival controls for the timing and stuff like that. The first stage, they ran on minute intervals, and then they decided that after service, we were told it was going to go to 30s. Then they changed it back to 30s, and we were arriving at time controls, and marshals, in fairness, struggled because all of a sudden they had all this traffic arrive and people yeah. meant to be getting fired in. And there was problems with the traffic lights on one of the stages, you know, where the lights go to 30 and the next thing it's at 10 and the next thing is you're on 5 and but the red stayed on and the lights were counting down. We had issues like that. And you know, they can only work with what they've got. But it was a very, very difficult event for everybody, I think. And I think it's fair to say when you pay your money, as we did, and there's people who paid a lot more money than us to be there, I felt like we were paying for their experiment a little bit. Because undoubtedly, everything will be ironed out for next year, if it runs the way it runs that way. But I think everything was kind of thrown up in the air, and it was like, right, we'll do our best to make this happen, which is great, and I take my hat off, and I know these guys don't get paid and everything else, but when you put the money in that everybody's putting in, it felt like we were paying for the experiment to see what went wrong.
I see, yeah, I can understand what you're saying there, but I think the way I'd respond to that would be to say that the BRC, the whole BRC this year has been an experiment, hasn't it? You know, it's a brand new championship being run by a new organising team, people who necessarily haven't got experience of running championships before. So I think the whole year has been one of those. I think people have committed to the championship based on not very much, because, you know, they didn't know what to expect at the start of the year. It's everything's completely new. So I think the events being experiments is not much different to the championship as a whole, really.
No, yeah, just to cut in there, just to explain really, because we've maybe got some listeners to the podcast who aren't familiar with what's going on here. And obviously the championship's been constrained by this new MSA ruling that effectively all cars are seeded in performance order regardless of which event they're fitting into. So we have some people who aren't competing in the British Championship, they're actually competing in the National Rally, that are seeded within British Championship runners. So just to clarify that for people who maybe wonder what we're talking about.
No, sorry, you're absolutely spot on, absolutely. And where I think where that falls down, and by all means, either of you can put me straight on this. We were in a Fiesta ST, Group N car, 130 brake, standard car. I was car 95, okay? Would I have been car 95 if I was in an R5 car?
No.
No, so that's where performance-related seeding absolutely falls over.
Yeah, other than you would be going faster if you're in an R5 car, therefore you should be seated a bit further up.
Yeah, but you're meant to be seated. So if I had done all the other rounds and then turned up on Nicky Griston in an R5 car, would I have been 95?
No, probably not.
Where it falls down. It absolutely makes a mockery of it. Really does. Really
but does. It, irrelevant. It is a rule that needs looking at, because it was obviously done for spectator safety on the basis that the spectators go for the fastest cars, and if the fastest cars don't arrive first, the spectators are arriving midway through the event to see the fastest cars. But when you've got multiple events run under the same banner and cars intermingled that are actually doing different rallies, it just makes... Rallying's complicated enough as we keep going on about, and to have three different rallies with maybe three different sets of results, but all the cars are coming past you mixed up, to me that's far too complicated.
And I'll be honest, I think it looks odd as well, because
because you've got World Rally cars in the mix that aren't even allowed to compete on a British Championship rally.
And you know, I suppose the platform is you know, for certainly from the promoters' point of view, is that, you know, they wanted to use touring cars was used a hell of a lot. And I know that's a circuit thing, but they were using touring cars as a thing. And as I said to Ian Campbell yesterday, I spoke to him about it yesterday. You know, you wouldn't have a Mark 1 Escort turn up at the back of a touring car grid.
And again, that's
wherein lies the issue. And you know, I said to Ian, I said, and again, I'm not telling tales out of school. I've been very, very honest when I've spoken about stuff like this, is that you've got to tell it as it is. And at the moment, we can't justify coming back. And it doesn't feel like it's geared for us to be there at the moment. And that's a bit of a shame. That's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, because for me... because the British Championship needs competitors like you. That's why the BRC's been successful over the years, because it had depth. What we can't get back to is what we had 4 or 5 years ago, or even 3 years ago, where we have 20 front running cars, and that's it. It just doesn't work like that. It needs depth.
Absolutely. Sorry, Jack, go on, mate.
No, I was just going to say, I think, you know, we've all seen what's happened with the seeding order. I think that was something to push through quickly to help with safety, and it's, you know, part of the safety review that we've had in this country as well. So not much choice for the MSA in that situation, but there is choice now moving forward for them to keep looking at this situation. And the answer to me is relatively simple, in the case that if, you know, if we had the Nicky Grist over the weekend, the seeding would have been the R5 cars followed by, you know, BRC2 cars or Matt Edwards on his own as it last weekend, and then the BRC juniors, and then a short gap, and then the start of the BTR day runners, because that way you're the guys at the back are getting premium roads, so that would encourage people to do the British Championship in order to get those better roads and to look after their cars better, and the BTR day guys you know, follow shortly after, but that's not currently possible because of the MSA seeding rules.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want, as I say, credit where credit's due. We need to mention, obviously, our winners. Matt Edwards, massive congratulations. He, you know, bless him. He's had no competition, but he's really muscled that Evo 9 in amongst the front running R5 cars anyway. And he secured the championship on Nicky Grist. He only had to finish, but he still managed to muscle that car in and did a cracking job. I know, obviously, Ray, you've drove Evos in the past, and they're a big old bus, and they're a big old bus to muscle in on R5 cars, aren't they?
Yeah, but it is a shame that we didn't see, you know, a few cars out there. Obviously, Philip Morrow started the championship and then disappeared, and it's a shame that there wasn't four or five front-running Group N cars all around. I still call them Group N cars, but, you know, all around that same sort of pace, really, because I think we would have seen a few of them in the top 10 regularly. You know, they're still quite a good competitive car. They're still very, very cost effective compared to an R5 car. I would probably say, you know, the running costs are literally half of an R5 car. And, you know, it would have been nice to have seen a few more cars up there with Matt. Maybe Matt, you know, Matt setting the pace, he is raising the game of the others, and to see a few up there. But who knows, maybe we'll get a few more out, because I still think they're probably the cheapest way you can do the British Championship for that sort of performance.
Yeah, I was going to say, apart from a Fiesta ST. Hey! we need to give credit to Elvin as well, who went out, drove a great event, and Tom Cave, who's going to be joining us a little bit later on as well in the podcast, who again, just Mr. Consistent, and Desi Henry, who just keeps on just kind of putting them in. He put a great tweet out the other week. I don't know if you've seen it, boys. We were talking about being on the podium with Elvin, I think on the Scottish, and he said, "I'm a builder," and he's a professional rally driver, which I just thought
It was in the Scottish report, innit, man? I put it in there myself. So,
oh, sorry, Jack. Sorry, mate. It's all right.
No,
he's
you're
very defensive today, aren't you? But there you go.
No, I'm just pointing out. I'm just pointing out that I didn't miss it. It was in the report. It was there for you to read.
Tell you what, Ray, he's getting a bit techy, isn't he? He's getting a bit techy.
I'm not getting involved.
I'm not
techy. All right. I want to do the BRC juniors now, Jack. I know this is something which you've been covering quite closely as well. Rob Duggan, it's a done deal now, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah, I think you'd be silly to bet on anyone else now, wouldn't you? And you know, I've written a column about Rob this week, and just a bit about his performance on gravel, really trying to highlight how good he's actually been on gravel, because he's not really done much of it before, just the odd one or two events in Ireland, and you know, this is a different standard. He's up against Gus Greensmith, who's a Drive Dean Match Trophy driver, and whatever you think of Gus's abilities, you know, he's been a front runner in that championship this year and at times last year as well. He was Rookie of the Year last year, so for Rob to prove his pace on gravel with very little experience, he's kind of established himself along with Sindra Furuseth as the best people on gravel who consistently do the championship. Obviously Gus is only doing one or two rounds here and there, so amazing performance from Rob, really. And I think you're right, the championship's sewn up mainly because he's not played his double points joker yet.
I assume that's going to happen on Ulster, because obviously it's double points anyway on the Manx, so he's going to play it on Ulster. I think most of the other drivers have played their jokers now, haven't they?
So you can't get double points then?
No, you can't get double points. Because that was a trick I was going to try, but apparently you can't do it. You're not allowed to.
See, I love this joker system.
I know. Hey, listen, you've got the platform here. Speak to Ian Campbell about it. He listens. Tell him.
I think I said from the start I wasn't entirely sure about it, but there we go. I know it keeps the championship open till the end, but I think double points on the last round does that anyway, really.
Okay, well, I know things may be adjusted a little bit moving forward, but still, we will see. A couple of other bits and pieces I wanted to get to. We wish Chris Wheeler and Jan Griff a speedy recovery. They were out in BRC 3, the only runner in that particular category this weekend, but had a very, very nasty off on Epping Rangers on day two of the Nicky Griss stages, and that brought short the events of all the runners, but I think we were all more than comfortable with that, the fact that rescue crews from other stages had to go up and recover those guys, and now both are still in hospital as we speak on the Tuesday / Wednesday, and as I say, we just wish you a speedy recovery, guys, and there you go.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
I tell you one story I wanted to mention as well, and I've just been speaking to Jamie Edwards for this for the Rally for Wales campaign. He's currently down in Cardiff, and they're presenting some things to some ministers, which has been discussed this morning, and as I say, we wish them the very best of luck, and when we come back after our 2-week break, we're going to have Jamie on. By then, hopefully, the plan and all this is going to work moving forward will be coming out as well, so Jay, I know you listen, and at this point you'll probably be in the meeting, but we've all got everything crossed for you. Cracking job that you've done as well. A couple of other bits and pieces. Don't really understand this one. I can only assume it's budget guys, but Henning Solberg noticed this morning that his entry for Rally Finland's being switched now from a WR car to an R5 car. It's got to be budget, hasn't it, boys?
I guess so. I don't know any more than that, any more like you, but like we said, the costs of running any of these cars are expensive, but a World Rally car is significantly more again than an R5 car. Having said that, Henning seems to keep finding budget, and he's run a World Rally car in far-flung places this year, but we mentioned it earlier about names coming and going from the sport, and I think that's what we forget is just how hard it is to raise the budgets to compete at the level we're talking about, whether it's British level, European level, world level. It's got an awful lot of notes on it, and to keep competing year in, year out, unless you have a funded drive from a manufacturer or an incredibly good sponsor, it's very, very difficult, and that's why we do see so many names drop in and out of the sport.
Absolutely. Guys, have we got our any other businesses ready?
We have, yep. Or I have. I can't speak for Jack, but I have.
By the way, Jack, just before I go, you, I'm very, very flattered the fact that there's a photograph of me in MN this week.
Well, you won your class. There's no favouritism in MN. You won your class. You get a picture.
At least there was some competition this weekend, anyway.
That's true.
Yeah. So, but still, there you go. But no, you managed to use the photograph where I'd lost my front number plate.
Is that true?
It makes the car look mean and moody.
I wondered what was going on there. It did look a bit moody. I thought I quite like that pick. I didn't realise you'd lost your number plate.
Yeah, I'd lost my front number plate.
I'm actually looking at the number plate, and you've only got one wheel on the ground, Tony. You actually looked like you were going fast.
No, it's just photoshopped.
Is it?
It's photoshopped, mate.
Photoshop?
Yeah, that MN have done me proud there, to be fair.
Right, I've got about... How many cars in the event were there? 160. I've got about 150 pictures of cars on one wheel like that. So if you want me to send you a few,
it's all right. We've got a cracking video of one on two wheels in a ditch. So let's put that out, shall we? Let's put that one out.
You've already said you're going to put it out, so you may as well do it.
All right. Jack, as you're the most vocal at the moment, you can do your any other business now.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, I'd like to point to a feature in MN, surprisingly. I've written a feature this week about a gentleman called John Campion. He's the whatever word you want to use, really, philanthropist, benefactor, that kind of thing, of this Team Ireland programme, which, you know, we've spoken about Rob Duggan earlier in the show, Josh Moffitt, Patrick O'Brien, all members of Team Ireland, which is... a bit like a MSA Academy type deal where they help him with physiotherapy and media training and
yeah, really... we had Art on, didn't we? We had Art McCarrick to tell us about it at the top of the year. Sorry, mate, go on, crack on.
Yeah, no, that's all right. So yeah, Art's someone who's definitely who's basically in control of the program, isn't he? Or he helps out the program massively. I know that for a fact. So I've written a little feature about John. For those of you who don't know anything about John, he was born in Cork and left for America in I think it was 1984. He was a roadie for some rock bands, and he saw that there was a bit of a space in the market for powering concerts when all the big bands like Metallica and people like that were increasing the size of their shows. Long story short, he's had a lot of big businesses and made a lot of money and bought a lot of old rally cars, mainly Lancias. So he owns the 1988 Mika Biasi on Integrale that won the championship, and he's got an S4 and an 037. So his love of rallying comes from 78 Billy Coleman on the circuit of Ireland, the Stratos. So good excuse to put some black and white pictures of a checkered flag Billy Coleman Stratos in the paper. <Yeah. That's good.
laughs> Cracking stuff. I look forward to reading that. I must admit, I have got a thing for a Delta Integrale. I really have got a thing for a Delta Integrale.
Especially in market delivery.
Yeah. Well, actually, do you know what? We was really surprised on the recce of Nicky Grist. We were obviously, when we were out at the Zormy Marshalls, and there was a red Evo 2 Integrale. Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking, wow, you brave bringing that up here. I wouldn't have it anywhere near these gravel roads, but still, bless him, there you go. Ryan Champion, you're any other business?
Well, I think that might have been belonging to Dom Delaney, who runs some rally cars. Right. I think I saw him tweet a picture of it on the gravel.
He put some pictures of it on Facebook. Yeah.
I thought he did. And funnily enough, my any other business links to two things you've just talked about. The first one, we had a message on the Facebook page. Keep the messages coming, keep your thoughts coming, from David Kelly about iconic rally liveries. Now, we've just mentioned one of them there, Martini Lancias. It doesn't get much more iconic than that. But what we'd like you to do, anybody who's listening to this podcast, just tweet us one picture. Tweet us one picture of your favourite rally car and its iconic livery. There's some obvious ones there. We'll not go through them all now, but certainly Martini Lancias is a good example of that. So David Kelly started the ball rolling. Tweet us in your favourite iconic liveries. So that's my first thing. The second thing links on to some of those Group B cars you just talked about. This weekend, there is a classic nostalgia weekend at Shelsley Walsh Hill Climb. Now, Shelsley Walsh is in the Midlands, in Worcestershire. If you're not doing anything this weekend, get yourself along to Shelsley Walsh either on the Saturday or the Sunday. There is over 30 Group B cars going. Not only have we got Group B cars going, but there's the likes of Jimmy McRae driving his original Rothmans Pro Drive Metro, another iconic livery, not that I'm giving ideas away. Russell Brooks in his Andrews Manta 400. David Llewellyn in an Audi Quattro there this weekend. So it's going to be a real spectacle, obviously, celebrating 30 years of Group B. And luckily enough, I'm going to be driving a Group B car as well, but I'm not going to say any more for now.
What are you driving, right?
I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to tell you it's X Works, and it was driven by a very famous driver.
Well, I was planning to come up at the weekend, so you've just encouraged me to come up even more now, to come and see what you're driving.
Well, come on a Saturday. Fortunately, it's Finley's birthday party on the Sunday, but I'm driving on the Saturday. But yeah, very, very excited to be driving the car that I'm pedalling.
Is it a Citroën Visa?
It's a proper Group B car.
Oh, right, sorry. Okay.
There is an example of every single Group B car there, I've been told. I don't know if that's what all the main ones anyway.
I think so. I think Mark Constanduris, who runs Shelsley Walsh, has been working hard behind the scenes, and I met Mark a couple of years ago actually on Rally GB, and he told me about this idea. But there's other exciting stuff there as well. I mean, there's an IMSA Audi Quattro from the American Championship, like a fearsome beast, again a Rothmans sponsored car. There's actually an Auto Union going, a 1936 twin wheeled Auto Union, which ran at Shelsley Walsh 80 years ago. That's running there again, so it's something for everybody. Should be a great weekend.
There you go. That's an enlightening any other business, in fact almost like an advert, some may say.
But I think for any motorsport fan, you know, it's a bit like a mini Goodwood, and I think that's great. You know, it should be a good event.
No,
in the Midlands as well.
My any other business, couldn't even say it then. My any other business is to thank the nice people of on the Nicky Griss stages, and first and foremost, as I say, I wasn't having a go at anybody before. The organising team and everything, fantastic job, and I wanted to thank them personally for giving us a weekend of motorsport. But the people who came to talk to us, there was three or four people who came to talk to us who download the podcast, which is always a little bit weird for me, because I had one instance where a lady...
Because there's actually somebody listening to
it. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. No, but I had an instance where I was talking to somebody in the signing on office, and I can't think of her name now because she'll be listening, which is going to be really embarrassing. But she was with Andy, who was one of my cameramen when I did some filming for the Historic Championship a few years back. And she said, "I know your voice." And then all of a sudden, she kind of clicked to me. Podcast? I was like, "I've heard you're in the car." I said, "Well, yeah, I'm not actually in the car, but yeah. So there you go." And then there was a guy who came up to me on in service on Eppens who had a little boy with him, and we had a lovely chat, and he was you know, we just caught up, and he was mentioning about parking on Eppens and how tricky it can be. he wasn't really.
That won't be James and Stephen, would it, by chance?
I don't know. I tell you what, he had a Citroen coat on.
No.
Be him. And then a fellow competitor, when we were lining up we were fortunate enough to win our class as Jack mentioned before on Nicky Griss. The way they did it, they had me, Matt Edwards, and the guys who were in the Mitsubishi Mirage R5, which is running in the National Cup section, which I'm going to tell you about in a second. But it was Lars Anderson, who's the co-driver in that car, who was a drummer in Metallica, as me and Jack were talking about before, but not this guy. He's a co-driver, and he came up and he said, "I really enjoy your podcast. I listen every week." So it's quite nice when people do that, and you know, we encourage you to do that. It's nice to know that people listen to it. And as I said to all those people who said they enjoy it, I said, "Would there be anything you'd make different? Would you do anything? Would you change anything? Would you do anything?" And so far, so good, boys. The three people, four people that I spoke to all said, "No, we really enjoy it, and you know, keep doing what you're doing." So there you go. Well done. This is my kind of verbal pat on the back for you fellas.
Thanks very much.
Now, one last thing before, as I say, I was talking to Lars about the Mitsubishi, and I had a little bit of a tour around it and had a look around it. They're still very, very confident, right, of achieving homologation, and they're telling me is that Mitsubishi are very interested in this program, and they're hoping to have it homologated for next year.
Well, that would be great, wouldn't it? It would be great for two things. Firstly, to get another R5 car out there, but actually, secondly, to see a Mitsubishi back at the pretty much the top level of the sport.
Yeah, so there you go, boys. Right, that's it. We've been very news heavy this week. We thought we'd give you a bit of an extra long podcast for this week, because obviously we're going to be missing for a couple of weeks, so you don't have to listen to us all in one go. You can pause us anywhere where you see fit. Normally about 30 seconds for most people, but there you go. But you know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter and facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. If you're going to sit back, relax now, we're going to be talking to Gus Greensmith up next, and then we're going to be talking to Tom Cave, who's going to tell us all about his British Championship Cup program so far, and maybe what's going to be happening in 2017. But sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast. So at this point, I'm going to say, Jack Benyon, thank you very much. Go and have an enjoyable fortnight off now.
Thank you very much, Tony, and same to you.
And Ryan Champion, go and enjoy wherever you'll be away, being a secret agent somewhere.
I'm in the sunny Midlands all week, and actually I'm coming home on Thursday from the Midlands just to go back again on Friday.
What were you doing at the weekend at Sweet Lamb?
So at Sweet Lamb, I was doing some driver coaching with some guys from the British Cross Country Championship. They are just wicked weapons. That's the only way to sum those cars up.
Hope you're talking about the cars. That wasn't rude.
One was the two cars I was in were built by a guy called Dan Lofthouse, and they vaguely looked like a Freelander, but one was running a Chevrolet LS3 engine with 530 horsepower, and the other one was a BMW M3 engine with about 450 horsepower and sequential gearboxes. And as I tweeted out, they're like the modern Group B cars. They really are fantastic.
It's not Mike Moran's new car, was it, Rye, by any chance?
No, okay. It wasn't, but okay. That may be one in the future. So I'll be back down there shortly, and a couple more guys that I'm going to do bits and pieces with, and it's something we don't see an awful lot of, the British Cross Country Championship, but I have to say the cars are very, very exciting.
Good stuff, good stuff. All right, boys, go and enjoy your fortnight off, whatever you're doing, and yeah, as I say, for the rest of you, sit back, relax. We're going to have Gus Greensworth up next, and then after Gus, we'll go to Tom Cave.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate, call Dane or Donna now on 441904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally, and it's good to be joined by, he was a friend of the show and then he disappeared and then he come back again and then he disappeared, but Tom Cave, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much, Tony.
It's good. It's good to have you back. Now, the last time we spoke was last year, where I was always a little bit tentative because you were forever the bridesmaid. It felt like when we were speaking to you, obviously you were doing the DMAC Drive Fiesta Trophy at WRC level, and you know you were the bridesmaid there and stuff like that. And I was fascinated to see at the end of last year what was going to happen and where you were going to go. And for you, Was it time you had to be in an R5 car? Is that how the decision was made to come and do the British Rally Championship in an R5 car?
Yeah, I kind of had my eyes on it sort of middle towards the end of last year, after I kind of knew what direction the DMAC was going to go in, and you know, it wasn't within my interest to continue in an R2 specification car. So you know, I wanted to progress, and you know, the opportunity came available to run an R5 car. So. So yeah, I couldn't really say no to it, to be honest. And yeah, it's been an interesting year really this year in the British Championship. There's been a few positives, but at the same time a few negatives. So yeah, it's good, and currently sitting second in the championship as well, which is encouraging behind Elvin, who's, let's be honest, a sort of a factory driver as such. So yeah, I'm kind of pleased with that. And with two rounds remaining, it's all up in the air at the moment. We don't really know how the way Ulster's going to go. And I think that's going to be a pivotal point at the championship, because if we don't finish in Ulster, Elvin will be crowned British champion. So it's important we don't let that happen.
I was going to say, we had Frederick Arlen on the other week as well, and of course Frederick has been at that WRC2 level. Do you feel it was important, was it as enticing to go back to the British Rally Championship, because obviously you've been there before, to kind of pit yourself against the Elvin Evans and the Frederick Arlen? Was that just as important as well?
At the time I didn't see it as that, but you know, it's encouraging that the pace the British Championship is on is WRC2 pace. You know, let's be honest, you know, Elvin is the front runner in WRC2 this year, and obviously he was fighting with Frederick on Rally Sweden, and they were the two leading guys in R5 car. So you know, there's no doubting that the pace we're on is World Championship pace, which is good, because if something does evolve from this year and then we go up to World Championship in the future, then I know we got the pace to be competitive. But you know, it's good to have Frederick here this year. He's definitely put a, you know, he's added a spice into the fight, as you know, we should say. He's been really competitive, but he's had a bit of a difficult couple of rallies, but hopefully he'll be back on form on the next one.
Absolutely. He claims that tarmac's not his thing, but I remember the pace very, very early doors on Ulster, and it was quite breathtaking for somebody who claimed not to have done a lot of tarmac, really, wasn't it?
On the circuit, you mean?
On the circuit of Ireland, I apologise. Yeah, on the circuit.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, to be honest. No one really knew, you know, what he was going to be like, but it's good for the championship, really. It keeps things interesting, but you know, it's kind of evolving into a two horse race now between me and Elvin. But obviously, Elvin has an upper hand. But you know, Frederick's, I think he's like 9 points behind us. But you know, I like to think we have the upper hand on him now. Our pace has progressed enormously in the last two, three rallies, especially since the Circuit of Ireland. Now I was nearly 2 seconds a kilometre off Elvin on the Circuit of Ireland, and on Leppins on Sunday we were only 0.3 seconds a kilometre off him. So. Wow. You know, we're making progress from there, so I like to think we could go and challenge him on the Ulster Rally if we keep working the way we're doing.
Is it feeling home now, the R5 car, after kind of, as you said, we started off by saying, you know, a couple of years in R2 cars? Does it feel like home now?
Yeah, it's getting there. We're on a encouraging pace. It's it's good. You know, I always go back to figures and look at figures of, you know, where we are seconds per K, and the Pirelli rally, we were just under a second a K off him on gravel, and now we're down to 0.3 seconds a K off him on both gravel and tarmac. So it's, you know, it has taken some adjusting from an R2 car, which is why I didn't want to stay in it again for another year, because it wasn't doing my driving any good. It was, you know, you kind of limited to how fast you can go in an R2, and I felt I couldn't really achieve much more. So, yeah, R5 is getting there. I feel like I'm finding the upper limits of the cars now, and, you know, they are technical cars to, you know, to find the limits of, because they're so well advanced, and, you know, the dampers and the discs on them, you know, they just create so much traction and sort of grip as well on the stages. So, you know, but we're getting there. I'm pleased, and the team as well, Spencer Sport, they're running a young team. It's the first time they've run.
Well, that was going to be the next thing I came to, because obviously it was a new team. Everything, you know, they've got experience of running themselves and stuff like that, and they've got this the Mitsubishi project they've been working on. But it was a big leap of faith, wasn't it, to go to a customer spec car, you know, i.e. the M Sport car, and bring it in for you, because I think the original plan, was it not, was for you to be in the Mitsubishi.
Yeah, that was discussed last year, but that never materialized. But Spencer's a, you know, they're very new to this. You know, they've done rallying at BTRDA level, but they haven't done it at a, you know, the terms of the British Championship, which is like almost professional level. And you know, it takes some time for the team to adjust, and, you know, for the team to understand what kind of work and what dedication needs to be put into the car behind the rallies as well, you know, to win. And it took us probably three events this year to really achieve that. When we got to the Plains rally, and everything decided to click for us, and ever since the Plains, really, the results have been good. You know, it's on the paper. I've proven that. You know, we're second on the Scottish, second on the Nicky Chris just gone. So we're certainly heading in the right direction.
Have you enjoyed the tyre war this year? Because obviously there's been a big thing. Obviously the Elven with the DMAC drive, and obviously you're on the Michelins, and then obviously Pirellis are coming with Frederick and stuff like that. Have you enjoyed the tyre war part of it as well?
There hasn't been. I don't know where you get the tyre war perspective from, but it's, you know, it's interesting to have three different tyre manufacturers are there. But you know, Michelin have been very helpful to me this year. Tim at Michelin Motorsports, he's head of the, you know, Michelin in the UK and Ireland. He's been on the events this year with me and on the tests and providing his technical help, and it certainly helped me. And you know, it's you know, tyres can be a very complex thing, and you can easily overthink tyres, especially on tarmac with compounds, and you see a bit of rain, as a driver, you overthink what compound you need to go on. But to have those engineers there to advise, it certainly helps. It's good for the championship as well to have, you know, three leading brands of tyres in the world of rallying, sort of all competing for the outright honours as such. So.
So moving forward, we've got a little bit of a gap now, I guess. We're having done the Scottish and Nicky Grist, but all within kind of 2 weeks of one another. It was a bit full on, to say the least, wasn't it? But now a little bit of breathing space. What happens now with Spencer Sport, Tom Cave? What's happening now to get ready for Ulster?
The car, I believe, is having a bit of a rebuild, and in terms of getting it spruced up for tarmac, because the next two rallies are all on tarmac. So damage won't be too much, you know, for the car, because there's no gravel to contend with. So, you know, we'll still be working hard, James and I, between the next rally, to make sure we keep match fit.
How do you do that? Because I'll be honest with you, we try to do this. We have people who download the podcast kind of all over the world, and we have people who are involved in the sport, and we have just genuine fans. How do you stay match fit? How do you and James Morgan, of course, your co-driver, between events? What do you do?
You know, we just keep working on our pace notes. I'll study the in-car from the last rally to understand where we need to improve. You know, there's always areas where we can improve, so we'll, you know, identify stage times which weren't necessarily as competitive as others, and we'll, you know, we'll look at that, study that, look at the data of the car as well, and understand, you know, what I'm doing wrong, so we'd make sure we, you know, progress in those certain areas. And obviously testing, you know, I'm looking to try and do a test between now and the Ulster. That's going to be important, because it's nearly 35 days, which I won't be in the car for if we don't do anything. So, you know, we need to keep this momentum going, because Elvin's obviously heading to Finland, so he'll have another rally under his belt again. So, yeah, you know, to try and keep up with Elvin, you got to keep plugging away, and you got to keep working hard, otherwise he'll just make massive ground on you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we've got a question from one of your fans. He was meant to be with us, Jack Bengian, who texted me a question to ask you. And I know nothing about this, so please, if this is bad, then blame Jack Bengian is where I'm going with this. I'm putting the caveat in. He said, ask Tom about his in-car on SS8 of the Scottish.
Right, okay. What do you want to know about it, basically?
Well, I don't know. It's a very open-ended. He said, just, I want to ask Tom about SS8 of the Scottish. What happened on SS8 of the Scottish?
Well, we were fastest, I suppose, on the Scottish rally. And, we said a good time for sure, but I don't really understand what he wants to know about it.
As a journalist, it's a bit of a crap question, isn't it, to be fair?
It is a little bit vague, like most journalists are, so yeah, that's fair enough. But
that's why I'm not a journalist, mate. I'm just somebody who does a bit of rally and does a bit of presenting. That's it. I'm not a journalist, mate. We'll ban all Jack's questions from here on in. I want to ask you one last thing, Tom, before we go. Get British Championship out the way, which sounds a terrible thing to say. Obviously, you're still hoping things go your way. Is there any hopes of perhaps being on home round of WRC this year? But you got any hopes of seeing you on Wales Rally GB at all?
Yeah, I've had a discussion with someone already about this when I went out to Sardinia last month. And, it's something obviously I want to do is my home rally, and I'm going to be in a competitive car. So I have made talks with someone about this, but... I think we'll know between now and the Ulster Rally whether something is going to be possible or not. But I can't really say much more than that in case it doesn't happen. But
no.
It'd be good to be there. And, it's a shame with what happened last year. Never really got to do the event. So it'd be good to come back this year and go and have another good rally, because it's such a great rally to do. And, stages I just know fantastically well. So it's kind of the natural step to go and do it at the end of the year and finish the year off on a high, but I kind of know more towards the end of next month of whether it's going to be possible or not. So
great stuff. Listen, mate, I'll keep everything crossed for you. Really do appreciate you joining us. Congratulations again on another solid podium, and I wish the very best of luck. I won't be out on Ulster with you, but I'll be watching the times, and I'll keep everything crossed for you.
Thank you very much, Tony. Thank you.
All the best. Speak to you soon, Tom.
Thank you. Cheers now.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And just to ruin our continuity, you may have noticed that the end of the first section where I was saying goodbye to Jack and Ryan, I was saying, right, so next up is going to come Gus Greensmith, and then we're going to finish off with Tom Cave. You've probably figured out by now that you've just listened to Tom Cave, which means automatically we're now going to talk to Gus Greensmith. So welcome back to Absolute Rally. Gus Greensmith, hello.
It's good to be back, even though I'm a little bit late.
I'll let you off, mate. You were on an errand. You were looking after your mum. You can't knock that, my friend. You can't knock that. But listen, I wanted to catch up with you. Obviously, you're our man in the DMAC Drive, and we had John on because we'd never had him on before, and he spoke about sunglasses and stuff, which we'll come to a bit later on. But you had a torrid time on that, and I said, I'll tell you what, let's get. I think I even said on the show the other week, I said, I fancy Gus to go well on Nicky Grist as well, and I think I'm giving you the kiss of death, mate.
I think you are. I think all these problems I'm having is because of you. Everyone keeps with well, and every time I speak to them again, I'm thinking, oh God, I've got to tell them there's something else has gone wrong.
Well, let's do things in kind of chronological order. Poland. I watch your videos, by the way, and I urge you folks, if you obviously you download the podcast, if you're not following Gus, check him out on Twitter. But he does these fantastic videos. And I watch. Is it Full Throttle? Is that what it's called, or Flat Out?
No, the new one's called High Speed.
It makes
sense where we'd just come back from Poland. It was a really easy title.
Right, okay. Yeah. Well, I watched that one this morning, and, everything starts off really positive, tells the story really well. Folks, seek them out because they are really, really good videos. But so just, I suppose, in your own words, just talk us through what happened on Poland.
Well, Poland is one of my favourite events. Any high-speed event is just so enjoyable to drive, even in R2. They're just the best things. And the commitment levels there needed to be high, and we knew the times were going to be tight, so we were really excited to get into the weekend. And it all started off really well. We won the first stage, the Super Special, and we went to bed all happy. And we woke up the next day, and we straight away, me and John were well ahead of the rest of the field. I think Oshin had a little mistake in the first one, and he joined us pretty quickly on terms of the pace. But the three Brits, we just left the rest of them. We were absolutely on it. We were all making a laugh and a joke at the end of the day about how hard we were pushing. Everyone was looking at each other's cars, thinking who's just going to break first. So it was a really enjoyable day. And I made two silly mistakes at some junctions. I overshot twice, so we ended the day 16 seconds behind John, and I think Oshin was a second or something behind us. So it was really close at the front. I think most of the day there was, I think John put it right the last time, that there was only one stage where we were all separated by more than 3 seconds. So it was ridiculously close all day, and it was a really good battle. So positive for the Saturday. We woke up in the morning, and I noticed that the brake pedal went straight to the floor when I first pressed it. I thought, this is a bit strange, because it didn't even feel like it needed re-bleeding. And then I put my foot on the brake the second time, and it would bite the disc perfectly. So we re-bled them, and we thought that would fix it, but it didn't. So on the road section, we stopped and we pulled over, and Alex noticed that the bearing in the hub had failed. So there was lots of play, which left us with two choices, really, to either retire or carry on to the rest of the day and hope that the actual bearing didn't fail. And in Poland, when you're doing 180, 190 kph, and if it fails, then you're going to have a big one. So it was a bit of a risk, but we had to get some points because we'd already suffered because of the mechanical in Portugal for points. So we had to get a finish here. So we pushed at the end of the day, and we managed to get it. Still in third, which was positive. And then on the final day, unfortunately, we hit the same rock Oit did, and we got a puncture. So we ended the rally in fourth. So it was pretty disastrous, but overall, it was an okay rally. Once I got my rhythm back on the Sunday, we were really good. We were really good on times.
I was supposed to say, you know, we know you're living this at the moment, and you're going through it, and you wear your heart on your sleeve and everything else, which is great. I think it's such an important thing. But you can not answer this. By all means, you can not answer this question. I know you listen to the podcast, and I've had people I've seen it on and stuff like that, and you know, I'm massively into mind mapping and positivity and positive thinking and stuff like that. Do you have somebody that you talk to and you work with on that type of stuff?
I spent a lot of time with a psychologist when I was karting, because the thing I always had was I was always very good in qualifying. I'd always be right at the front in qualifying, but then when it came to the racing, the part that I didn't particularly enjoy as much as the driving, I would always suffer a little bit more. So my pace always exceeded my result at the end, and that was because of just some things about thinking about things too much. So I started working with a psychologist, they're called I2I, near where I live, and we worked and we tried these new methods, and then I never had a problem since. It's only ever been looking forward and with one eye on what's happening behind me, but main focus going forward. So I've never had a problem since then. I'm always very calm and collected, and then sometimes you need a bit of aggression just to kick yourself back into gear when you normally make a mistake, but now I'm pretty mentally sound.
No, it's just obviously you've just described issues and what you went through and everything else, but at the end of every point you were making, we took positives from it. We took positives from it, which is just a great, you know, the mental strength to be able to gear yourself towards. That's why I asked the question. As I say, some people don't like answering those questions, and it's something which I believe in. I believe in, you know, I just think that it's something that is so untapped in motorsport. It's untrue, but more and more people now, obviously, you know, the likes of yourself coming through and things like that are starting to tap into it. But I just think it's such an untapped, you know, you can test and you can drive and you can have driver coaching and stuff like that. But there's always, there's the mental block, I think, is one that you can almost never coax that out in the driver's seat. That's just something you talk your way through. And you've just got a massive grasp of it already. I just get that feeling whenever we talk about these things. But Poland, obviously, aside, championship-wise, we're, and obviously you wanted to win this year. We rookie of the year last year. The championship changed a little bit, didn't it? Because we got the news after polling that Oshan had now won this prize of two rounds in an R5 car in WRC 2 next year. Does that change your approach now for the rest of the year? How do things work for you on that front?
It's changed my approach a little bit, because to be honest, I have no doubt that if we wouldn't have had problems in Portugal, that was my win. No one was going to take that from me. In Poland, it was going to be a lot closer, because John was on great form during that weekend, and Oshan was driving really well too. So that would have been a lot closer. So we'll never know if I would have had no problems, who would have won that in the end. So I believe that we've been robbed of the first two the first two drives, but that's my own opinion. I'm sure many other people will think differently. But now going into Finland, after suffering in Poland, there's the two drives at the end of Finland, and there's only one way I can approach Finland, which is just flat out, because there's nothing, if I don't finish, there's nothing to lose for the last two rounds of the championship, because they're that's a separate prize. So Finland for me is just something I'm just going to go, and I'm working so hard at the moment, as soon as I got back from Poland, to make another step up in my performance, to try and just build a bridge, a gap to the rest of the field. So I'm doing my best, but Finland's just got to be flat out and make sure I'm consistent and make no mistakes.
How do you prepare for that? We've just had Tom Cave on, and he's just been talking about his preparation for Ulster Rally, obviously in an R5 car and everything else. But he was just talking about the work that he and James Morgan do between events. What do you and Alex do when you've just said you feel you need to step it up, perhaps on Finland, and that's where you're going to go and push? Does that change your preparation with Alex?
Not so much, because Alex has just come back from Nicky Griff stage, and then he's gone back home to America. My way of preparing is just by watching on board and keep watching and understanding the lines a little bit better, and understanding that maybe some lines that I would take are not quite the right ones. Just trying to understand the flow, and I'll make notes for stages just to for them to become more familiar. So when I come to a stage, I don't need to look at the notes to remind myself. I already know the general gist of how it goes. And obviously the physical training is a big part of it. Finland's not so bad because the temperature's not that high. So it's you prepare for each round differently, but this one in particular is just concentrating on the lines over the crest, just to make sure you're in the right position at the end of it, because you don't want to be coming over a crest a bit too sideways in Finland.
No, not at all. Now, you've just mentioned Nicky Griff stages, which was the last round of the British Rally Championship. Of course, last weekend we spoke about it at the top of the programme. This was an event for you to, I guess, was it just a seat time exercise, or, you know, what was your mindset for this particular rally?
Well, when I went into Nicky Griff, of course, the reason I went there was to win, along with seat time. It was a tricky weekend again. I think that's the best way to put it. I think of the stages, we didn't have a problem on. I think we won five out of the seven stages or something. So the pace was great, but then again, another mechanical, and then on the final day, I just said to my dad, I'm just going to push, and whatever happens, happens. And then I crashed. But you've got to, if you're pushing the limits, there's no doubt at some point you're going to find them and go over them, and that's what happened. But it was only a small crash.
Now, I'm not doing this in a gloating way. I went past you because obviously I'm seated about 47,000 cars behind you. But so I get the glory of going past everybody that's kind of had issues before us. Now, it looked kind of a innocuous type corner, and I mean that with the greatest respect, but I went past you and the car was on its wheels. I didn't realise, you only just told me before we started recording this, that you'd actually gone over as well. So just tell our listeners a little bit about what happened there.
Well, it was, the rain had just, as you know, the rain had just started coming down pretty heavily, so we were on the wrong tyres, we weren't on the wets as a race, so that didn't really pay off, but still, I was still only focused about going as fast as I could, as that was the plan from the beginning of the day. So it was a very steep descent down the hill with just flat rights and jumps and, well, some little lifts and stuff. So I was absolutely pinned down the hill, absolutely not letting off. And then there's compression at the bottom, and I was just starting to brake before then. And for some reason, I didn't spot the puddle of water at the very bottom. And as soon as I hit the puddle of water, we aquaplaned. I got the car back under control, but by then I hadn't slowed it down enough for the corner. So we hit the bank, I was expecting just to bounce off the bank and be able to carry on, maybe with a bent beam or something. But we found a rather large rock, which kicked us up in the air and sent us for a roll.
Oh dear. Now, you said it was only a little one. What you've just described to me, that I know, by the way, and please, folks, I always appeal to, we have people all over the world that listen to this podcast, and we always talk about the unique characteristics of a lot of the rallies that certainly in the British Rally Championship, and you've probably both Ryan, myself and Jack are quite passionate about Ulster and Circuit of Ireland and the Manx, but Epping Rangers is a very, very odd experience, and I urge you to search out some YouTube footage and stuff like that, but Gus will kind of back me up on this. It has all the feelings of a single venue type rally, because it all looks very, very similar. The tarmac is a very, very good quality, but what Gus has just described there isn't actually any kind of natural drainage on the roads as such. It just kind of, the water just sits. And there was a downpour that happened just before, I think, Gus went into that stage and just after he went into that stage. And the water just sits on the stage. It doesn't go anywhere. It's not like it's got grids and stuff either side. It's very shiny tarmac where water just sits on the top of. I think it's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, it was the way it collected at the bottom. It was just out of my... For some reason, I still talking, thinking about it to myself the past few days, thinking, how did I not see the puddle of water? But, yeah, it just collected in... There's nowhere for the water to run off apart from where it naturally flows off the road. So you have to be careful with the patches of water. But if I ever go there again, at least I've got that experience now that if it does rain, that's exactly what I need to be looking for.
Absolutely, absolutely. That nearly caught me a few times, as we said, and it's caught one or two others out, but there you go. So listen, Gus, thank you for joining us this week. Now, we've kind of promoted you a little bit because you're at the end of the programme. Albeit by circumstance. I know, don't get too excited. Now, normally at this point, there'd normally be Jack or there'd be Ryan, and we give them a kind of a moment to have any other business thing, a little bit of news or something that they may have spotted, obviously to do with rallying. What would you like to do in any other business? Anything else that you've got on your mind with regards to rallying that perhaps you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think a topic that I've spoke to a lot of people about recently is what's the most competitive junior championship at the moment. And I think it's getting a few people talking about it, and I'm quite enjoying looking at and seeing what other people have said. But we hear a lot about the junior BRC, and we hear a lot about the junior ERC and the Drive DMAC and the JWRC. It might be interesting one day to put a poll out to see what people actually think is the most competitive championship.
What a great, great point. What a great, great point. And that's going in the notes. Junior championships. No, do you know what? That is a really, really good one, that is a really, really good one. Okay. Gus, you've gave us a subject matter for our next programme now as well. We're gonna have a 2 week break, but when we come back we're gonna come back with that. But of course you are, mate. You're always invited. Doors are always open. It's just
awesome.
You just turn up when you want to, don't you? Let's be honest.
Awesome.
Listen, Gus, that is the end of the programme, and I do thank you for joining us. And it was good to catch up as well over the weekend, mate. And it was good to see your smiley face and Alex's as well. So you go and enjoy your time now getting ready for Finland. I'm very envious of you, but I'll be watching from afar, and we'll be rooting for you, mate, okay?
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Gus Greensmith joining us this week on Absolute Rally, and you know where we live, it's Absolute_Rally on Twitter, and if you want to get in contact with us, as a few people have and left us a little message, it's facebook.com/Absolute Rally. As I keep mentioning, folks, we're going to have 2 weeks off now because I'm moving house, and I need 2 weeks to do it.